Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 323. Greta, how you been?
How I been?
Yeah.
I've been good. I feel like it's been a minute since I've been on an episode with you. So I'm hoping that I'm not too rusty.
Yeah. It has been a little while, but it's all good. We kind of filled people in that there was going to be maybe, but you know, we weren't going down in the quality, but you know, there's going to be a little less of you probably, at least for the next few months, right? But you weren't going away completely.
No. Yeah. However, I will take issue with the fact that quality and I are not directly proportional.
No. Well, that's I'm. Yeah. Anyway,
just giving you a hard time.
Guess I kind of pinged myself into that corner.
You think?
That's not what I meant, though. All right. In this episode, we'll be taking a close look at Smith of Wootton Major, the mysterious fairy tale that stands as the last of Tolkien's fictional works published during his lifetime.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what a works is, but that's what I said.
Works, I don't
know. Fictional works published during his lifetime.
Let's roll with it.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our amazing fellowship. Hands up. Stick them up. Fellowship. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsht. Nice.
That's a good one.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., Scotchy Bobo, and Eru27.
Thank you, guys.
And a shout out to our newest patron, Sophie S.
Welcome.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Also want to recognize, because I think I mentioned her in the last episode, we have another one, recent patron as well, Shauna Supreme. So, yes, I think I mentioned on the last one, but you weren't on that one, so I thought I'd mention. So
awesome. Very cool.
Sophie, Shauna, thank you very much for your pledges.
Thank you, guys. Yeah.
For joining our fellowship. Mm-hmm. Also, a shout-out to those celebrating their fellowship anniversary in January of 2023. A lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Bagelman, David G., Cynthia C., Mike M., John R., Scott W., Jason T., Alina V., Melanie, and Tyler W., thank you all so much for sticking with us over the last year, and in some cases, years.
Like multiple years.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Thank you, guys.
For sure. So you guys are awesome. Thank you. Hey, Fellowship of the Road. Become a member of our fellowship. Join our fellowship by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. When you join the Fellowship of the Road, it helps us to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way, like 20% off of our merch, including Tolkien Road t-shirts, the coveted Two Trees camper mug, and signed copies of my books. So learn more at patreon.com/Tolkien Road.
Yeah, do it.
And if you do an annual membership right now, you get 2 months off. So boom.
That's a good deal.
It's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah.
YouTube, hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. All right. Finally, we arrive at Smith of Wootton Major. In this episode, we'll be reviewing the story and having a knockdown, drag-out, deep-dive discussion, classic Tolkien Road style.
Oh, boy.
But here's the thing. As you're going to find out, Smith of Wootton Major is one of Tolkien's biggest mysteries. Now, a lot of other folks have written extensively about what it means, including Tolkien himself. For that reason, there will be a part two coming at a later date, probably sometime in February. So you'll want to make sure and subscribe now so you don't forget, because then you'll never find out what this bad boy is all about, according to the real experts. And I'm talking experts like Tolkien himself, obviously, but also people like, you know, renowned Tolkien scholars like Verlin Flieger and Tom Shippey, right, who have both weighed in, you know, in various ways about what Smith of Wooten Major is about. Yeah, I mean, Greta, you know, we've been talking about this leading up to it, this story, mm-hmm. and I think we're both very much like, kind of like, what is going on with this story? You know,
it's a head scratcher.
This is not an easy mm-hmm. one, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the sense of like, oh, it's clear what this means, right. And not that really any of Tolkien's stories, anything that Tolkien wrote, is really not like that. But I feel like, in, you know, with so many other things that he's written, I'm kind of like, okay, I get it. You know, mm-hmm. I know where he's coming from. Really, mm-hmm. like, you know, Leaf by Niggle. You know, On Fairy Stories, Mythopoeia, even like, or, you know, just not even to mention his Middle Earth works, of course. You know, I really get it. Like, I get those things. Not that I fully am like an expert on them, but I get them, right? They resonate deeply with me. But this one, like, I'm like, it's not resonating with me in the same way. But is there something I'm missing? Or is it worth, if you spend more time, if you kind of apply yourself, right? More, if you apply yourself with more intensity, does it yield something, right? Mm. And so that's what we're trying to discover here. But let's start with some origin. Let's start with some background on Smith of Wooten Major, because it has kind of an interesting background. Tolkien biographer Humphrey Carpenter connects Smith of Wooten Major with the death of C.S. Lewis in 1963 and the sense of gloom that would often overshadow Tolkien in his later years. Carpenter writes, "Not untypically, Tolkien turned this particular depression to good effect. Just as his despair over his failure to finish The Lord of the Rings had given birth to Leaf by Niggle, so anxiety over the future and his growing grief at the approach of old age led him to write Smith of Wooten Major." But I will say this, Leaf by Niggle, the famous kind of background to that story is he just kind of woke up one day and he wrote it, right, all in one sitting. I don't think Smith of Wooten Major necessarily happened that way. I think it was much more of a, like, over time process, and it certainly was not just sort of a spontaneous thing, right? Mm-hmm. There was a reason he started writing this story.
Yeah.
In true Tolkienian fashion, the story began as something quite small, only a parable within a preface intended for George MacDonald's The Golden Key. Originally titled The Great Cake, it soon took on life of its own, eventually being published in 1967 as the novella Smith of Wooten Major. By the way, does anyone feel like "took on life of its own" could have been Tolkien's life motto? I always just think, like, I sometimes you'll see a, like, kind of a cliche that that cracks you up, and I just, like, think of, like, "took on life of its own." If that doesn't, like, just encompass what Tolkien was all about, like, you know, that's exactly it. But Smith of Wooten Major truly took on life of its own in a way, you know, and I think we'll get more into this, but the version of this book that I held up for you to look at here on the YouTube channel is the expanded edition of Smith of Wooten Major, and you wouldn't know it's expanded because it's a tiny little book, but it's the one. This is not the original version of Smith of Wooten Major that came out. It's got the story in there, but then it's got a lot of other things included, including many, like, kind of outtakes from Tolkien associated with this, some writings from Verlyn Flieger, and, you know, just like a lot of notes and that sort of thing. So there's and some really cool illustrations by Pauline Bays, who is has illustrated other things, had illustrated other things that Tolkien wrote. So it's worth picking up a copy. It's not terribly expensive, but it does contain a lot of extra material beyond just the story. It's really a story that kind of took on life of its own. Do you know who George MacDonald is, by the way?
Yeah, of course.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you read things by him?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read the one, The Prince. Wait, what was it? I forget. But I really liked it.
Yeah.
The Princess.
Oh, the is it the Goblin?
Yeah, Princess? The Princess and the Goblin.
Princess,
yes.
Yeah, there we go.
The Goblin. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I've never really read a lot by him. I have read things here and, like, little things here and there, mm-hmm. but, like, and I'm familiar with kind of his story, but I'm not, like, super familiar with his work. And what's interesting to me is, like, yes, Tolkien was invited to write this thing, but I feel like he kind of got into this the writing of this preface for The Golden Key, because George MacDonald was kind of, like, you know, had lived, you know, well before Tolkien. Right. They may have overlapped a little bit, Tolkien, but MacDonald would have been an old man and Tolkien would have been a kid. So it wasn't like they were contemporary literary figures, right? They were, George MacDonald is kind of like almost like a godfather of the modern fairy tale and like modern fantasy in a way.
That makes sense.
Maybe a pre-godfather, and then Tolkien's the godfather. I don't know, but anyway, George MacDonald like was famous in the 19th century for like these fairy telling fairy tales and that kind of thing. But what's interesting to me is that even though Tolkien was invited to write this preface to this book, it seems like he was kind of like he wasn't exactly a fan of George MacDonald in the end. It was just kind of probably one of these things where it was kind of like, hey, you're a fantasy guy, he was a fantasy guy, why don't you write this preface for his book? And Tolkien was kind of like, yeah, he wasn't really doing what I'm trying to do, right? It kind of thing kind of dawned on him over time. Anyway, that's great that you're familiar with George MacDonald. But that really kind of leads into, what maybe a little tease of what this story is about, because I don't necessarily want to, one of the great things is that when Tolkien started writing this, this story as this preface, let me see if I can write
this.
Can I just
stop you? Yeah, like, I don't understand why you would write a story as a preface. Like, so, that's what I'm trying to work out in my brain.
Right, right. So let me see if I can find, all right. So in this expanded edition, Verlyn Flieger in the foreword, she begins by saying, "Don't read this, not yet," but it's in quotation marks, right? And she says, "It was with this unequivocal admonition that J.R.R. Tolkien began his never finished introduction to a proposed edition of George MacDonald's The Golden Key," right? So those were his words, right? When he was writing this introduction, yeah. Okay. "Don't read this, not yet." And that kind of gets at the heart of this idea that, like, Tolkien, was a believer. And I think, in respect for other writers, other artists, you're like, read the work before you read all of the commentary on the work.
Yes, right? I think that's fantastic advice. I've actually stopped reading. Like, I am so, like, ridiculously competitive with myself in, like, lots of areas of life, but especially in my reading life, I'm like, I'm going to read it cover to cover. Yeah. Like, and I don't even, like, every single page I'm reading it. And I felt like, and every time I did that and I would read a foreword or a preface or whatever, it would spoil something. Or it would, like, it somehow messed with my interpretation or my enjoyment of the reading.
Yeah.
So I actually got to the point where it pained me to, like, skip to, like, page 15 or 16 or whatever where the story actually began. But I was like, I feel like it's just harder to appreciate a work for what it is if you allow someone else to speak to you about it beforehand.
Yeah.
Even if it's not an explicit spoiler, it does something to, like, your expectations and the way that you're going to interpret what you're reading.
Well, it gets to the heart of this whole concept that Tolkien was very insistent about over the course of his literary career. You know, this idea that, like, the story is the story, right? It's not a symbolic thing about this other thing, right?
Right.
It is the story itself.
Yeah.
That's what I sat down to write. That's what I wrote. That's what I had published, right?
Yeah.
That's what is important. Doesn't mean that the commentary and all the other things that come after aren't important, but without the story, you wouldn't have the commentary in the first place.
Exactly.
And there's something about kind of the primacy of going directly to the voice of the author and letting it make the impression on you that it will make, and having him communicate directly to you without the mediation of all of these other people, right? And this is coming from people who have basically done a podcast on that's mediation, right? That's saying, like, well, here's what, but we're not, our whole thing all along has been the acknowledgement of, like, we don't want to be, like, telling you this is what it's about. We want to be, like, sharing our thoughts and having an ongoing discussion about all these things.
Yeah. We are very proudly non-influencers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I like that, right? Like, I'm not here to be like, let me hold your hand. Like, it's more like, give it a shot. And once you've read it, come listen to our podcast and let's join our discussion about it. Let's talk about it. You're free to disagree with our takes on it. And that's kind of part of the fun.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
But we're not here to, like, lecture you necessarily, right? We're explorers, right? We're explorers along with you. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
So maybe that answers the question about why he was writing a story as a preface, because he didn't want to influence people about the story that they were going to read.
Well, so here we go. All right, check this out. All right. If Smith of Wootton Major can be said to be about anything other than what's in the story itself, it's literally a story about the idea of fairy. Tolkien himself said this. Carpenter references the passage from which Smith of Wooton Major originally sprang, in which Tolkien attempted an explanation of what exactly is meant by the term fairy. This is from the thing that he never published, the preface to The Golden Key, right? He says, "Fairy is very powerful. Even the bad author cannot escape it. He probably makes up his tale out of bits of older tales or things he half remembers, and they may be too strong for him to spoil or disenchant. Someone may meet them for the first time in his silly tale and catch a glimpse of fairy and go on to better things. This could be put into a short story like this. There was once a cook, and he thought of making a cake for a children's party. His chief notion was that it must be very sweet." All right, so he was right. He was like setting out to write this introduction to The Golden Key, and he started kind of like trying to tell this like little parable, right? To kind of like say like, what's fairy, right?
Gotcha.
What do we mean by the idea of fairy?
Okay.
And then this thing took on a life of its own. And when I say it took on a life of its own, and you know, again, we'll explore this probably in part two. It took on a life of its own, like not just in his commentary on the story, but in the sense that like he wrote the story and then he had like genealogies and like history that goes before and after the story, right? Mm.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Within this secondary world, it's almost like he was trying to create another secondary world, kind of like Middle Earth exists, right? You know, for the Silmarillion and Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. It's almost like he was trying to create another secondary world towards the end of his life for like the Wootenverse, maybe we'd call it, right? Or the Smithverse, right? Like it really, you know, when you see the stuff that he created along with this, you're like, oh, like he was in the process of doing something just like that.
And it's interesting too, and I don't know, maybe I should say this comment for later, so if I should, just stop me. But I feel like as I was listening to Smith of Wooton Major, we had not too long ago, we listened to one of the space trilogies.
Out of
the Silent Planet.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was kind of being reminded, like the way he was describing the scenery, I felt like I was kind of reminded of that. And so it was interesting to me that this was written after C.S. Lewis's death. Mm. Like I felt like that kind of makes a little bit more sense to me now.
Yeah.
That maybe it was not really a tribute to him, but he was obviously like influenced, I think, by some of the things that Lewis described or created in his own works.
Sure. And I don't think I've mentioned this, but let me come back to, let me just make sure I get the date right of when this was actually published. So it was published in 1967. And he didn't really even start the story until sometime in the mid 60s, right? So Tolkien himself would have been probably into his 70s, right? When he started this story, right? So he was not a young man anymore and had not been for a long time. And he saw Lewis die and he's like, how much longer do I have, right? You know, he had the approach of, you know, old age and death very much on his mind, right, as he wrote this story.
Mm-hmm.
So, so just kind of continue on a little bit more background and we'll dive into the story. Tolkien's preface was not actually published as part of The Golden Key, though it later saw publication, that preface later saw publication with editions of Smith of Wooton Major, and it's one of those things we'll explore in part two. And like we said at the beginning, this story is mysterious. As we dive into the details of the story itself, it's really challenging, I think, for both of us. And I've read and listened to it several times over the years, and it still puzzles me. It feels like he's getting at something really important, but I can't quite grasp it in the way that I've grasped the other stories that I mentioned, or the other stories and writings that I mentioned earlier. But with other writers, I might not bother to press on, but this is Tolkien.
That's nice.
Right. This is Tolkien, so of course I shall, right? Like he's earned that from me, right? And, you know, I really think from any of his fans, right? To borrow a line from the Book of Proverbs, it is the glory of Tolkien to conceal a matter, but the glory of the Tolkienite is to seek it out, right?
Nice.
Okay, so yeah. That's one of my favorite verses. The original verse is actually, it's the glory of God. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter. It's the glory of kings to seek it out, right?
Mm.
And I just love this idea of, like, Tolkien is the figure who, like, planted the mystery here, and then we're trying to, like, kind of piece it all together. Like, what is he getting at with this story? So, all right, well, let's talk about the story itself. I think it would be helpful to give just a short list of key characters.
I agree.
Because it gets a little... That's one of the things that is a little bit tough about this story at first, is you're kind of like, who we talk... Because names do kind of...
Yes.
Some of the characters have multiple names, yeah, right, throughout the story.
Yeah.
All right, so... Let's start with the Master Cook. So the Master Cook is, you know, one of the characters at the beginning of the story who leaves Wooten Major. His other name is Ryder, right? And he is Smith's maternal grandfather. We learn this later in the story, okay? Smith, or Smith's son and then Smith, right? He's the boy who receives the Fae Star at the feast at the beginning of the story and eventually becomes a traveler and fairy. And he is also known as Starbrow. Alf / Prentice, he is the mysterious apprentice to the Master Cook who is later revealed to be the King of Fairy. Noakes, he is the Master Cook at the beginning of the he's the Master Cook after Ryder leaves for good. He becomes the Master Cook. Tim is the great-grandson of Noakes, and he's the one at the end of the story who will inherit the Fae Star from Smith. And then the Fairy Queen, there's a lot of other characters we could mention, but those are kind of the big ones. The Fairy Queen is kind of a mysterious one. We'll talk about her. All right. So I kind of see the plot divided into maybe four or five parts, right? So we have kind of the setup, the establishment, Smith and Fairy. Years go by, Smith has to resign the star to the next generation. Alf judges Noakes, and then passing on to Tim, right? So the setup, right? The establishment. So we're introduced to Wooten Major. It's kind of this ancient village. It maybe has some, like, shire-like qualities to it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily dealing with hobbits. We're just dealing with, like, normal human beings, it would appear, right? So we have Smith, we have Wooten Major, and then we have the Master Cook, Noakes, and Alf, who are all kind of in the early part of the story. They're like kind of the three main characters, right? And they're involved with this feast, right? Or this the cake baking, right, for the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Feast of Good Children, I think, is what it's called.
Yeah, so it happens every 24 years.
The cake is like this big deal, right? It's this mm-hmm. big deal that you know, everybody kind of looks forward to. Is like, what's
the centerpiece?
The Master Cook going to come up with for, you know, for this?
Mm-hmm. It has to be extra special because this feast only happens every 24 years,
only
24 kids are invited. So
the Master Cook, aka Ryder, he goes off on a journey at the beginning of the story. And then comes back from, you know, this faraway land, and he brings this character Alf with him, right? Who's also known as Prentice. He becomes kind of the apprentice. Then Master Cook leaves again, apparently for good. And then Prentice stays Prentice, but Noakes is this other character who then becomes the Master Cook.
Because they don't think Prentice is ready
yet
to be head cook.
That's right.
Because he's still kind of young.
So we get to the feast, and Noakes comes up with this idea for the cake, and it's going to have this fairy queen on top of it, and it's going to be like covered with sugary icing and everything like that. And then they find this silver star, right? They find this star, this fae star, right? And they're going to put this fae star in the cake. It's kind of one of the things that's just found within the cake. And they don't necessarily mean for somebody to swallow this, but they figure they'll bite into it and then they'll realize they have it. And then it's like, oh, there it is.
Kind of like the idea of like a king cake, right? How you like bake a little baby doll into the cake and whoever gets the piece
like a little
the baby doll
yeah,
in it.
A little trinket for the kids to find. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's just a way to make it a little bit special.
That's right.
Yeah.
But Smith, one of the kids at this feast for this cake is Smith's son, right? And he's, you know, he's just a, you know, less than 10 years old at this feast. And, you know, he seems like this really unremarkable kid. But he swallows this star unknowingly. And eventually, when he reaches about 10 years old, it starts to manifest itself like on his forehead.
Well, he spits it up.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of gross.
Well,
it like falls out of his mouth. And I guess in catching it, he could does one of these numbers.
Yeah.
And that's so, how it ends up on his forehead.
Yes. And so he becomes known as Starbrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're always so good with the details. Sometimes I kind of gloss over little points of detail. Well,
I mean, because the first time I listened to this, I was very confused about how that all happened. So when I listened to it the second time, I was like, oh, okay. So he basically regurgitated it and then slapped it onto his forehead. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And it is. It's a challenging story for all of its detail, right? It doesn't, you know, it's not like that. That's one of the things that trips you up is you're busy trying to make sense of it while you're busy trying to like on a what's it about level. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you're trying to be like, wait, what happened here? How did he wind up here? Like, what's the, you know, these kinds of things. So
even after listening to it for the second time, I was still not sure that Alf and Prentice were the same person. I was like, oh, I think they are, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. You have to, I mean, you have to kind of get this stuff down in your head, you know?
Yeah.
And so Smith, you know, he, his father passes on. So he becomes not Smith's son, but Smith, and he becomes the blacksmith for the village. But he also, he goes off on travels sometimes for business, but then he ends up going off on travels in Faerie, right? So he goes to this land of Faerie. I'll quote from the story. From time to time, he would go off, sometimes walking, sometimes riding, and it was generally supposed that it was on business. And sometimes it was, and sometimes it was not. At any rate, not to get orders for work or to buy pig iron and charcoal and other supplies, though he attended to such things with care and knew how to turn an honest penny into twopence, as the saying went. But he had business of its own kind in Faerie, and he was welcome there, for the star shone bright on his brow and was as safe as a mortal can be in that perilous country. The lesser evils avoided the star, and from the greater evils he was guarded. He soon became wise and understood that the marvels of Faerie cannot be approached without danger, and that many of the evils cannot be challenged without weapons of power too great for any mortal to wield. He remained a learner and explorer, not a warrior, and though in time he could have forged weapons that in his own world would have enough power to become the matter of great tales and be worth a king's ransom, he knew that in Faerie they would have been of small account. So among all the things that he made, it is not remembered that he ever forged a sword or a spear or an arrowhead. So, yeah, he gets off going and, you know, on these travels, and he winds up in Faerie. And one of the things that Tolkien does insist upon is it's not really important how he gets to Faerie, right? You know, it's not, and it's something he kind of, just an interesting little note, it seems to be something that he kind of had a disagreement with George MacDonald on, is like this idea that you like have to go into like some special place to get to the land of Faerie. And he's like, no, it's just like, it's this continuous place with ours. You just don't know the way, right? It's not like this like thing you have to have special portal access to, right? To get to,
not
it's
like
just
a
like,
wardrobe.
It's just another part of our world that's normally hidden from us, right?
Almost like an alternate reality.
Yeah.
Which not everybody is aware of.
Yeah. Which in itself is an interesting sort of aspect to this, mm-hmm. right? Like it reminds you of like the whole idea of Gondolin. Like, you know, you just have to know the secret, like it's not a portal. It's part of our own world. It's hidden from you, and you have to know how to get there. And if you don't know the way, you can't get there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if I just tell you the way, then it ruins that for you. Right. It ruins all of it for us, which is, it's an interesting sort of philosophy when it comes to this idea of Faerie in and of itself. But, we'll probably end up talking about that more in part two of our Smith of Wooten Major discussion.
I was really, this piece here that you quoted, where he remained a learner and explorer,
yeah,
not a warrior.
Yep.
That like boom, like mm-hmm. got me. I was like, okay, I think this is crucial
mm-hmm.
to understanding the story. Like that whole idea of remaining a learner and an explorer as opposed to a warrior.
Yeah.
And like what is prized in our society versus what is truly important,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And then that whole thing about how he never, you know, it was never remembered that he ever forged a sword or a spear. That I was thinking of, like, basically, because, you know, we just finished the Silmarillion, so it's kind of fresh in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But that where they were talking about how at the beginning, like, there were no weapons, right, in the beginning in Middle Earth. And it wasn't until You know, it wasn't until that
the darkening of Valinor, or at least those things weren't used for that purpose until Melkor came along and started kind of inspiring them to distrust one another, like, you know,
so it's almost, you know, clearly this fairy is, it's a sort of paradise, right, kind of like Valinor, kind of, you know,
but it's a perilous paradise, right, if that makes sense. And because we do learn that, like, you know, like, there's some really stark, like, this is not like Candyland, you know,
this is, and that's
one of the themes, right? That's one of the themes that very much arises in the story is Noakes looks at Fairy and he thinks it's like these trifling little sweetnesses for kids, right? And Prentice knows, and Smith finds out that it's really not. It's the exact opposite of that. It's a perilous place, right? Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, but at the same time, terrible place, right? Like, you know, because you see these images, like, of, you know, these, remember the stern elven mariners that, like, Smith meets at one point, right?
Yeah,
and, like, you know, it's like he seems to be on this island and it's kind of like a it's the perilous realm, right? Like that note, like the title of Tales from the Perilous Realm, right? That's what we're talking about. For Tolkien, fairy is about the perilous realm, right? It's a synonym for the perilous realm. All right. On with the synopsis here. So there's some interesting scenes where Smith is in fairy, right? And he's kind of on these different journeys. There's two different trees. There's the King's Tree, and then there's this birch that he kind of has a conversation with. He ends up, like, dancing with this mysterious woman. I think they dance, right?
They do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we find out later on that she's the Fairy Queen when he comes back later.
That was reminiscent to me of Goldberry.
Yeah.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's what's really cool is there's all these little notes of this story where it's like Tolkien's like alluding to Middle Earth, things of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of things like that. I listed a few later on, but anyway, the next big thing is that, you know, Smith kind of continues with this, and even that, like, Smith, like, going from this little quaint little town to, like, into the perilous realm, and, like, people being like, why were you gone? Where were you? And you're like, well, you wouldn't really understand. You come back and, you know, people look at you with suspicion. And who's that like? That's like Bilbo, right? Like, I mean, that's the story of Bilbo right there, right?
For sure.
Years go by and eventually, you know, Smith grows old and he finds out he must resign the star to the next generation. We have kind of, you know, more adventures with the Fairy Queen, and then he meets Alf as an old man and learns that he is the Fairy King, right? And that's why the Master Cook Ryder had brought him to Wooten Major in the first place, right? And that's why he butts heads with Noakes, is because Noakes is kind of like, oh, it's all just silliness, and Prentice is like, well, no, it's not, because, you know, he's the Fairy King. He knows this Fae Star is like a big deal, right? But he learns he has to give up the star, and then we learn that Master Cook, the original Master Cook Ryder, was Smith's grandfather as well. There's interesting conversations between Smith and his son Ned, and then we have kind of these last two scenes with Alf, many years beyond, but Alf judges Noakes, right? Like he kind of like just lets Noakes have it in terms of like what he really thinks of him, right? So Alf, remember, is the fairy king. And he says to him, "Goodbye, master." So and Noakes this whole time has been like kind of haunted by this Fae Star, like what was it and what happened to it? And but he doesn't think that anything like, you know, real happened to it. He just figures it was like, well, I wonder who got that, and, you know, like, and but Noakes, you just read the story and you're like, he's kind of this not likable figure, right? He's like he just seems very like dense and he just kind of writes off anything that has to do with fairy, right? So Prentice says to him here later on, he says, "Goodbye, master. Noakes, your knowledge is so great that I've only twice ventured to tell you anything. I told you that the star came from fairy, and I have told you that it went to the smith. You laughed at me. Now at parting, I will tell you one thing more. Don't laugh again. You are a vain old fraud, fat, idle, and sly. I did most of your work. Without thanks, you learned all that you could from me. Accept respect for fairy and a little courtesy. You have not even enough to bid me good day." And then Noakes snaps back and Alf reveals himself, right? Kind of, it's kind of like this, like, you know, Gandalf when he's like,
yeah,
you know,
the same thing.
When he's like, don't make me show you who I really am, mm-hmm. right? Alf reveals himself to Noakes. Noakes gets scared and like passes out. And then he wakes up and Alf isn't there anymore. And he's like, oh man, it must have been a horrible dream. I won't, it must have been that pork I ate. And so Noakes, I guess, had always, you know, was pretty fat at this point. And so he wanted to be skinny. And so Alf had, you know, been like, I'm going to grant you this wish. And Noakes ends up not really eating anymore very often. And so he like just loses tons of weight. And he's like, well, it was just my bad dreams because, you know, inspiring me not to eat poorly anymore. Right. So Noakes never really learns his lesson. Right. He just thinks it's all like part of normal reality. Right. As it were. And then the stars eventually turn, given to Tim, who is actually one of Noakes's grandsons. Tim receives it in kind of like this, like past, like kind of like Smith did right at the beginning of the story. So that's a very like bare bones plot synopsis, and I skipped over a good bit, but I just want to hit the discussion because I mean, mm-hmm. there's so much, like we both have read this story several times now or listened to it. One thing I do want to say, for those of you who like us have listened to it a good bit on Audible, I, for one, just a little side note, find the music they have with this and with Tales from the Perilous Realm, like just like that's not, I just can't imagine that's what Tolkien would have wanted. Like it's like this, like it sounds like kids music from like an 80s. So it seems like the exact opposite of what you know Tolkien would have won, like from a like kid, like an 80s TV show or something like that for kids, right? It's like, and I think it sets the wrong tone. Like if I would rather them not have music at all, but anyway, that's just a little side note on that. Greta, yeah. What do you make of this story?
It's $1 million question, isn't it?
Yeah,
I will say I liked it better the second time through. I really didn't care for it the first, not that I disliked it, I was just like, this is weird.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that's over. But the second time I enjoyed it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's like reminiscences of lots of different things, you know, kind of that I mentioned. It reminded me of a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely feel like there's obviously he has a purpose with everything he writes. And so I'm a bit frustrated by this because I don't know what his purpose is. It's going to take more brain power, I think, than I have to offer right now.
Well, hopefully we can just kind of discuss it out. I mean,
yeah.
And here's the thing. Like, I don't really know that there is supposed to be like one, it's like all the other things Tolkien wrote. This is not supposed to be.
There's no like right some kind answer of like secret and wrong answer.
It's almost like he rejected the idea of the golden key, and I don't know if that's what really George MacDonald meant by the golden key. But the idea that like there's this like if you just understand this, it unlocks the rest of the story, right? I don't know that that's necessarily because Tolkien didn't write that way, right? Like that's kind of like, you know, when you read the Chronicles of Narnia, when you read Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when you realize that like Aslan is supposed to be Jesus, you're like, oh, that makes sense of everything, right? Like, you know, that's like the golden key to that story, right? It does now. There, you know, doesn't spoil the story or anything like that. But it is. There's very much like when you realize that you're like, oh, I get that, right? But Tolkien didn't write that way, and he intentionally did not like stories to be told that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
there is a key in this story, though, and that what you reminded me of, and that kind of was thinking about what the key in this story unlocked. I wonder if that has something to do with it.
Well, I don't know, and maybe we can, you know, I mean, what do you think? Like, so what remind me of this?
Well, the key was, I think it was after Smith dances with the fairy queen, she gives him a flower, and mm-hmm. he brings that flower back to Wooten Major, or Wooten, yeah. And he puts it in, like, a little, they call it a casket, but it's probably just, like, a little wooden box, right, mm-hmm. with a key, a wooden key, and the special thing about this flower is it's basically incorruptible. Like, it doesn't fade, it doesn't die, like, years go by,
mm-hmm.
and so this key unlocks the box that this imperishable flower is in.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering about, like, I don't know, just that idea of like incorruptibility, or like fairy, kind of the beauty of fairy is mm-hmm. that in a way it is, you know, maybe it's kind of alluding to the imagination that if it's not perishable, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, so, no. Well, let me kind of hit some things that, yes, that occur please. To me as being things that are definitely going on here, right? So I will say from the outset that this story feels like it has a very symbolic feel to it.
You know,
it feels like it's rife with symbolism. And that's one of the challenges with it, is you're kind of like, your mind immediately wants to jump to like, well, what does this symbolize? Like, what is this symbol? You know, and knowing that he wrote it is like, began as this like sort of parable, you know, within this preface, where he's trying to teach about it. It began with a didactic purpose, right? To teach about something, right? Mm-hmm. Two kids, but it took on another life of its own. So it still has this symbolic feel to it, and it's hard to escape that, even though we know Tolkien didn't necessarily like to write that way. We definitely have this theme of like succession and passing of the baton going on within this story, right? So you think about it, like you have the master cook, right? The master cook is four different characters in this story, right? You get Ryder, Noakes. Is Alf ever actually the master cook? Or, okay, he's just the apprentice. Okay. All right, so you have at least Ryder, Noakes, and then Harper at the end of the story, right? Yeah. Harper at the end of the story becomes the master cook. And you have Alf there to kind of like guide them. Alf may be the connecting thing with all of this, right? Because he guides the master cooks, but he also seems to be, you know, kind of influencing and choosing who Starbrow is going to be, who's going to get the star. So Smith in the first place, and then Tim in the second case. He actually would have chosen Tim if Starbrow hadn't. But he would have gone with whoever Smith wanted to, he says. But
because he gave it freely.
Yeah.
Which is interesting too.
Yeah. We have these two like different things of succession in here, in this sense of like, first of all, you have Master Cook, and you know, what is the master cook, you know, responsible for chiefly? It's for making this like, you know, beautiful cake. And you think about it, like cake is an extra, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cake is not like the core meal, but it's kind of, but in this case, at least, and maybe we're, I don't know, maybe we live in a post-cake, post-dessert era.
Also, we're not British, right? So we don't have afternoon tea.
But you think about like weddings and that kind of thing, like mm-hmm. the cake is like the centerpiece in terms mm-hmm. of like the meal, or it's not the centerpiece, but it's like the thing that symbolizes like how really special this all is, and like kind of the joy and even like, you know, you think of like fairy tale wedding, like the fairy tale mm-hmm. aspect of it all, right? Like mm-hmm. that it's like, it's this thing that just sweetens everything, right? And lifts it to say, this is a really important event.
It's a special occasion thing. Right. Yeah. You don't just have cake for nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but you don't.
Yeah. So, you know, the cake itself like symbolizes like...
It elevates the...
Yes. Like it's the special thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the... it's not... what was the thing in Dead Poets Society? When he like talks, he's like trying to teach them about poetry, and he's like going against this person who's like, you need to understand poetry in this way, and it's like that's not how this stuff works. This is the stuff we live for. Like why we go on living. Like why we need like what gets really to the heart of who we are, right? And the cake symbolizes that, right? The cake is the symbol of the feast. It's not the thing you have every day, but it's the thing you can look forward to, right? And they look forward to it every 24 years, right? What's he going to do, right? So the master cook is this office of like the person who is providing you with the things that sweeten your life, mm-hmm. right? That give mm-hmm. it greater, that give it greater meaning and significance.
Yeah.
You have Ryder, who seems to be a good one, right? And he goes back, and but he knows that something is missing, and he doesn't really have somebody, he doesn't really have a good plan for succession. So he goes and finds Alf, right? And brings the Fairy King, and brings him back to kind of shepherd this process over the next couple of generations.
Right.
And then Noakes is this, like we've said, he's this dense guy. He doesn't really believe in like fairy in the right way. He doesn't understand fairy in the right way, but still he's responsible to be the master cook. But he leans, it's almost like Ryder knows that the next person is going to be a disaster. The next master cook is going to be a disaster. So he brings in Alf to make sure that he can't screw things up too bad.
And there's something here to be said about age too, I think, because mm-hmm. the whole reason, like, and it's kind of like Prentice is never the master cook.
Yeah.
And even though he's, you could make the argument that he's the most suited to do it
mm-hmm.
and could do it, but nobody trusts him
yeah.
or believes in him because of his age.
Mm-hmm.
They always say, oh, he's too young. He's too inexperienced. Mm. And here, Noakes is, you know, this old crotchety man who, you know, is just like, there, I'm just going to do my job. You know, like, he wants to make it special. You know, he's the one who has the idea to bake these trinkets into it, but it's just like, you know, just blinders on, like, do what I'm told to do. Stay the course. And then all the other, you know, all the other master chefs are older too. Mm-hmm. Alf is the only one who's never made a master chef because of his age.
Yeah. And like Noakes represents this like view, which Tolkien was just against for so long, right? Like you go all the way back to On Fairy Stories, which he had, you know, written 25 years before this, and closer to 30, like, and he basically says, you know, there's people who view fairy tales and it's just like, oh, those are just like silly little stories for kids, right? Mm. And that's Noakes's view of the cake and then of fairy too. But that's the thing, is like cake doesn't represent fairy. Cake kind of points to fairy, like and opens the discussion about fairy, right? Because fairy is a thing in this story. It's not symbolized by anything. It is a thing, right?
And he actually puts a fairy on top of the
right.
cake.
And so that's
a wand.
That's what he thinks a fairy is.
Yeah, it's like
right?
this very, like, just, what's the right word? Just like kind of your in your typical, like, in the box, like Tinkerbell.
Yeah, like yeah,
that's
Tinkerbell.
His idea
Tinkerbell
fairy.
Of fairy. Yeah.
Like, he's just like, it's just a very concrete, like, you know, no muss, no fuss. This is a fairy.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, generic, I guess, is
yeah.
maybe the word.
Yeah. And So Noakes is kind of the foil. Noakes is the foil in all of this,
mm-hmm.
right? I kept thinking
mm-hmm.
about like, what does Noakes' name mean? And it's like, no clue, you know, no key. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we have this very like, you know, this theme of succession with the master cook, from Ryder to Noakes to Harper. And then we have a theme of succession with Starbrow, from Smith to Tim. And if you look more into the extra writings that are included in the expanded edition, you see that this goes back before the beginning of the story and then past that. So there's even more succession than that going on, right? So, you know, there's this thing of like Tolkien. We talked about how Tolkien is at the end of his life or nearing the end of his life. And these kinds of things are on his mind. Like I had this gift, right? Or this like fascination, this ability to go to this place. And maybe not everybody has this, but why was I given this? And do I still have it? Or is it time to pass it on to somebody else? You can see him maybe thinking through all of these things. Mm. I feel like this story is very like autobiographical in a way. Mm. Like in, I don't know that Tolkien would have said that, but still it's kind of like, but I see the things that point to something like that going on. Noakes, just a little more on Noakes. You know, it says in the story, it says fairies and sweets are the two things he knows children like, right? So again, you just see that like fairy tales are sweet stories for kids, and the opposite of how Tolkien saw them. The Fae Star, he finds it and he thinks it's a funny little thing, right? And Alf hears him kind of say that, and he's like, no, it's not. It's like, it's, you know, perilous and important and dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. Alf, let's talk about Alf a little more for a second. So Alf, the name made me think of Alfwine, right? Which Alfwine is really important for Tolkien. It's this old, kind of old English name, and the history of this particular figure goes back a long way. I think he's a historical figure, but Tolkien incorporated him into the legendarium very early on, where he is the first man to find the straight road and visit Tol Eressëa after many millennia, right? Mm. So he's kind of coming back to, he's kind of reopening this way to the perilous realm that had been lost for a long time, right? So Alf, I see his name. You can think about A Apprentice, right? Is like, you know, he's the apprentice, but he is actually, you know, he's really the master, right? Like he's the one that knows the way to the perilous realm and can point people to that in that direction, right? So Alf seems to represent Alfwine, which the name means far traveler. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
So, just some other like Middle Earth connections too. We Rider reminds me of Strider, right? Very much. But Rider is more like Bilbo, which I talked about earlier. We have these elven mariners that Smith, Starbrow meets, you know, and the description is like truly like kind of terrifying when you hear about these figures. You're like, whoa, he must've been pretty scared. He's overtaken by a gray mist at one point that reminds me of like when they're, when the hobbits are in the old forest. The King's Tree, right? I mean, anytime you see trees, in Tolkien's works, you think of like the Ents and just different forests that they're in at different times. He only sees it once, but he continues to seek for it, right? The thing that struck me with all of the descriptions in here is that the realm of fairy seemed to be the realest place in the recounting. Like in terms of descriptive quality, Wooten Major seemed not like it's almost like it's supposed to be real, but it's the fake place. But the perilous realm seems real, right? That was something that just struck me on this last time going through. It was like the way Tolkien writes about this it's so vivid that it seems like the real place, right? The place that you're truly alive. And the quote-unquote real world seems fake, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. But
I mean, your mileage may vary on that one, but it's just something that struck me as I was going through it.
Well, there's a lot more description.
Yeah.
When he's in Faerie. Like, you don't really know anything about Wooten Major. Like, he doesn't describe it really at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's almost like, what's worth describing about it, you know?
That's true. Although they do mention at the end that they repainted the hall.
Yeah.
But that's really, like, the extent of your knowledge of Wooten Major centers around this party.
Yeah.
Like, those are the only times you're taking the Wooten Major, really, is around the party time.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, and that happened, that only happens every 24 years. So it's kind of like, what good is a place when the cool stuff only happens every 24 years.
Yeah, for real. Well, and what do you make of the Fairy Queen and kind of in Smith's interactions with the Fairy Queen? I mean, I haven't been able to do much with this.
Yeah. Well, I think I already mentioned that it reminded me of Goldberry.
Yeah. It's probably also remind us of Galadriel too.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard for me to see Galadriel dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, if we're talking about the Rings of Power, Galadriel, then that's for sure.
We're not talking about the Rings of Power.
I could see Galadriel dancing in a very like maybe high queenly like way.
In
you
a
know?
High queenly way, maybe. Yeah, I guess. the other thing that it made me think of was like the Glenda, in the Wizard of Oz, like the good. The good witch.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think Tolkien would like
he
that.
He probably wouldn't like that. But I guess that's just kind of how I pictured her.
Yeah.
Like, just this very, like, approachable, kind, good, you know, good, almost like a, maybe a Marian type figure. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But she does give him a flower,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And she's the one that tells him this message, to take this message to the king,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because you're like, well, you're the queen, so why can't you just give him the message? I don't know. Something to think about.
Well,
what do you think?
Well, I don't know. Like, I honestly, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about the fairy queen a little more and see what other writers have had to say, other folks have had to say about the fairy queen. But, I mean, all in all, like, if you had to, like, summarize, like, what is Tolkien trying to say through the story? Like, what would you say? I mean, what are your thoughts? And I can go first if you want.
Yeah, why don't you go first?
I mean, I'll try to keep it short, but, like, I think this is just a story about, like, what fairy is,
mm-hmm.
and that it's not what most people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And Noakes mm-hmm. is supposed to represent, like, what most people, like, what most adults think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
But it... If that's where you get to, then you're being dense about it, but it's not something that can just be accessed by anybody either, right? It's kind of there's kind of a gift and a special access that it takes to, you know, to get to this place, and there's maybe like there's really not necessarily a normal kind of succession within this lifetime, you know, to identify, like to figure out who has it, right?
Mm.
Who has that ability to see it. So anyway, those are, you know, still like thoughts that I feel not great about, like not like I completely get it, but I feel like I'm getting there and I'm looking mm-hmm. forward to, like, you know, kind of diving into what Verlyn Flieger has to say, what Tom Shippey has to say, what Tolkien himself has to say, you know, about the story. And honestly, I'm hoping between now and when we do the next episode, we can have some people who really know a lot about the story, maybe write in and share some things with us. So,
yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
I think what I would say is it's, I feel like it's a challenge to like, even though we're going to age, like our bodies are going to age and all that, like physically we're going to age, to not let like your perception of the world age with your body, like to kind of continually see the world through the eyes of a child, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I mean, because, you know, you get jaded and, you know, as you get older, you know more, and that affects how you view lots of different things. So I'm not saying to be like, you know, to be unassuming and clueless, but to just kind of maybe hold on to that whimsicalness that you had as a child,
mm-hmm.
And maybe approach life with that attitude more often than not. And I think when it comes to fairy, the two people that are given access to it, they're both young boys, right? They're young. And or they're given access when they're young, and then it's like they came about it not expecting it, like not looking for it. It was a very like passive thing, mm-hmm. right? And the world would look at them and be like, well, why him, you know? Because mm-hmm. like even at the end with Tim, and you know, Smith asks, you know, he's like, I know it's a funny choice, but you know, I really want Nooks's grandkid to get it. And and Alf agrees. He's like, oh yeah, that's who I was gonna choose. So it's, you know, it's maybe the unassuming you know, the unassuming, unlooked for gift that arrives for those that are willing to still be open to whimsy. Maybe
I feel like you know, as you were talking about, like seeing the world as a child would see it, I'm gonna kind of spin that just a little bit and say, you know, this idea of recovery that's in On Fairy Stories, right? Of seeing the world as it's meant to be seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not as it is, but as it's meant to be seen, right? This this view of enchantment. And Noakes represents the, like, you know, the type of person who's like, you know, not even as it is, but just kind of like, you know, that has no capability of enchantment, right? Has no capability of being enchanted, yeah. of mm-hmm. of like understanding that like just because it looks this way doesn't mean that's what it is, right? You see these kinds of characters all throughout Tolkien's various writings. I think of like the end of Leif by Nigel with, you know, when Nigel and Parrish are gone, and you have that like little epilogue with the people looking at Smith's painting, what's left of Smith's painting, and you have the really obnoxious like town, like political leader in the town who's like, you know,
Wait, was that a Smith too? In Leif by Nigel? No, it was Nigel's painting.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You said Smith's painting.
Oh, sorry. I meant Leif's.
Okay,
I meant Nigel's painting. But you have like kind of these like, you know, people who are just like, oh, it's just, you know, this is not, you mm-hmm. know, anything special.
Mm-hmm. It's not worth anything. Yeah.
And instead of being able to look at something with this viewpoint of enchantment and mm-hmm. seeing, you know, and then that's like how to see that's like Alf chides Noakes for not seeing in that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
For not seeing in that way at the end of his life.
Yeah.
It's like that's the thing that Tolkien seems to be getting at. You know, we need to look at that moment of judgment. There's something going on there. We need to hear what Alf is saying to Noakes there, yes, big time, because we don't want to be Noakes, right?
Yeah, we don't
want to
be Noakes.
Noakes in this story, fortunately, is kind of a lighthearted story, so it's, you know, he's kind of a laughable figure in his goofiness, but mm-hmm. you can see that that could go very wrong as well in a lot of other ways.
Yeah. Definitely.
But at the end of the day, like, this story is just like so rich. It's like trying. Mm-hmm. Speaking of cake, it's like trying to eat a whole cake at once. It feels like whenever I listen to the story, because I can tell I'm just like, oh, there's so much I want to appreciate mm-hmm. in the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like one bite, and I'm like stuffed. You know, I feel
that's a good analogy.
It's
yeah,
just
perfect.
Tough to deal with.
Yeah.
So. All right. So yeah. For next time, we are going to. You know, I'd love to hear from you all, and you yeah. know, if we get some good correspondence on mm-hmm. you know what you all do with it, definitely into sharing some of that.
For sure.
I'm going to talk about some of the things Tolkien himself said about the story, what Verlyn Flieger had to say about it, Tom Shippey, and if there's any other writers that you all know of that have some good things to say, let us know.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Hey. Thanks for watching and or listening, everybody. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or the platform of your choice. If you are a 5-star fan of The Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps get the word out about The Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on. And drop us a line. Yeah. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, YouTube, Twitter @TolkienRoad. Yeah, those are the places.
Yeah.
We'll do our best to respond to you somehow and at some point. All right, everybody. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R.,
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Jacob Lockham,
John H.,
Area 27,
Ms. Anonymous,
Andrew T.,
Red Hawk,
Shannon S.,
Brian O.,
Emilio P.,
Zeke F.,
James A.,
James L.,
Chris L.,
Chuck F.,
Ozzie V.,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C.,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D.,
Eric B.,
Johanna T.,
Mike M.,
Robert H.,
Paul D.,
Julia
Werty,
Matthew W.,
Joe Bagelman,
Chris K.,
Jacob S.,
Richard K.,
Matt R.,
Garrett P.,
John W.,
Eugene D.,
Chris B.,
Daniel S.,
Seb M.,
and Shauna Supreme.
Thank you all.
Thank you all so much for watching and or listening. We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.